The following is an audio podcast from the Korea Society, celebrating over 50 years of promoting greater awareness, understanding, and cooperation between the people of the United States and Korea. For more information on our programs, please visit our website at www.koreasociety.org. This podcast is brought to you through the generous financial support of the Tongyang Group. In the areas of financial services and manufacturing, the companies of the Tongyang Group harness the passion and creativity of 12,000 employees worldwide to better serve their clients. The Tongyang Group, a global partner for Korean business. On April 27, 2010, the Korea Society, the leading American organization dedicated to understanding and cooperation between the U.S. and Korea, convened a panel of experts to discuss possible Korean responses to the sinking of the Chunonam, a Republic of Korea Navy ship. Ambassador Thomas C. Hubbard, Chairman of the Korea Society, John DeLurie, Associate Director of the Center on U.S.-China Relations, and David Straub, Associate Director of the Korean Studies Program at Stanford University's Shorenstein Asia-Pacific Research Center, examined various scenarios for Korean responses, as well as the internal political and economic considerations influencing the key actors. The discussion was moderated by Dr. Stephen Norper, Senior Vice President of the Korea Society.
So to begin, our session this morning is titled In the Wake, Weighing Korean Options After the Chunonam Sinking, discussing the implications of March 26 when an underwater external explosion led to the sinking of that vessel. This is a week of national mourning in Korea for the loss of the 46 brave soldiers, sailors, and we here at the Korea Society are taking a moment of silence at all of our events this week to honor those who have died. We have a floral display here at the Korea Society, and we are offering our condolences to our Korean colleagues today who are observing. President Lee Myung-bak and Defense Minister Kim Tae-young have been very cautious with their comments. The entire government is taking a more cautious approach. But today we ponder their options from a supportive, non-official perspective. And joining us are the Korea Society Chairman and former Ambassador to the Republic of Korea, Tom Hubbard. From Stanford University, David Straub, the Associate Director of the Korean Studies Program at the Shorenstein APARC Center. And John DeLurie, the Associate Director of the Asia Society Center on U.S.-China Relations. We'll turn now to each of our distinguished policy observers as we weigh the options and ask what's next. And over the course of this discussion, we'll examine the implications for Korean security, ask for the tie-ins relative to regional security. We'll explore U.S., China, and other perspectives, the likelihood for U.N. sanctions and a step up there, possible North Korean responses, and implications for the six-party talks. Ambassador Hubbard, if we could begin with you and your thoughts on the incident.
It was a very tragic and serious incident, and our hearts, of course, go out to the families of those who lost their lives and then to the entire Korean nation. And I'd like to join in this week of mourning. Secondly, I'd like to congratulate the Korean government and President Lee Myung-bak for the very careful and thorough way that this incident has been investigated. I don't think we yet know precisely what happened. Things do start to become clearer as the ship has been lifted out of the water. But I think President Lee has played a very statesmanlike role in focusing first on trying to find any survivors, and then secondly on a very careful investigation of what happened before drawing any conclusions and taking action. I think if this was the result of a torpedo, I think it is a very, very significant incident. It implies a very direct attack, or would imply a very direct attack at a naval vessel carrying over 100 people, and that is that is a kind of incident that goes well beyond what we've seen in the last several years, where there've been incidents in the West Sea, but they've been, you know, sort of exchanges of gunfire, more sort of spontaneous combustion rather than a planned and deadly attack. So I think we would be best starting out this session before any of us draw any conclusions by asking the representative of the Korean government present in the call to give us the latest official Korean government assessment of the situation.
Okay, the minister is asked to refrain from making any comments, but he has expressed before this conversation just the general state of the difficulty of the decision-making process, that there have not been conclusions drawn, but that he feels, as the government does, that this is a time for exerting great caution and trying to really get to the details. We also discussed the questions of political viability with the upcoming elections, and that's certainly a difficult quandary that this panel here may wish to return to. David, have you thoughts on the implications relative to choices and next steps in terms of policy options for the Korean government?
Well, I'd like to second Ambassador Hubbard's condolences. This is a terribly tragic event for everyone involved, and for the U.S. as an ally, I think we all share in the grief of the families and the friends of the sailors who were lost in this incident. I would also second Ambassador Hubbard in his assessment of how the government of Lee Myung-bak has handled this. I think the only word for it is wise. President Lee could have been caught up in the moment and could have said all sorts of things, but from the very beginning, he was far-sighted, disciplined, and imposed discipline on his government. And so instead of leaping to conclusions which could have backfired, he has said that the focus must be first on taking care of the victims and the families, and second on investigating as objectively and expertly as possible what actually happened. Now, it does appear increasingly likely, I think, that the North Koreans probably were behind this. We're not at a point where anyone has concluded that, but given the proximity, given the unlikelihood of other explanations, it certainly seems likely that the North Koreans have done it. I'm reminded of the old Sherlock Holmes saying that when you've eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. Well, in this case, what remains is actually fairly likely and was so from the beginning. But it's good that President Lee Myung-bak is waiting. I think he's going to have to, after final decision is made on what was the cause of this, I'm sure that President Lee will assemble his best brains. I'm sure he's already doing that now, to map out contingency planning. In that regard, I doubt that the South Korean government will conclude that a military attack or anything like that would be the appropriate response. That's the way North Korea behaves, and look what it's gotten North Korea over the decades in terms of support from the international community. In other words, nothing. I was pleased to see that the foreign minister the other day suggested that one of the things that they would likely do if they determined that the North Koreans have done it is go to the UN Security Council, and I think that's absolutely appropriate. I would note that in the past, when there was a similar problem in the 70s in the West Sea, that the South Koreans also responded very effectively by bolstering their defenses there. And I would expect South Korea to do something again there to bolster their defenses.
Very good. Thank you. John, do you feel that there's a line of action that does include a military option or surgical strike, as has been mentioned, or is this off the table?
Well, before leaping into that, which, I mean, I think I'd agree with David and most observers now who see that as, you know, sort of the least likely scenario. You know, I just want to double back a little bit and add as well my personal condolences. I was in South Korea just last week and certainly felt the degree to which the whole country sort of experienced the loss. This was a large significant loss of life. And there's certainly an intense national mourning period going on, and that makes this a very difficult conversation, I think, to have because of those raw feelings that exist. And of course, we're focused here more on policy and the political dimension, and it's a very difficult conversation because the full evidence is not in. But there's been lots of preliminary evidence and speculation and initial analysis. And so we already are working off a kind of hunch of what happened that David, I think, admirably articulated and just put it right out there that most people are thinking North Korea was probably behind it. But I think, for the purpose of this discussion, we need to simultaneously hold in mind what we really know. And whether we're likely to actually know much more than what we know now, and then consider what the different scenarios are in terms of a response, primarily from South Korea, but also from others. So in terms of what we know now, at least last night when I was able to check this stuff, the preliminary investigation has identified a bubble jet caused by an explosion near the ship, but it's being described as a non-contact external explosion. And from what I gather, neither torpedo nor mine is more likely than the other. I mean, both are sort of out there, but those have been identified as the likely causes of the explosion that created the jet of water that's powerful enough to crack a large ship like the Chonan in half. So that is, it seems, what we know now. And I think there's an open question, are we really going to get to know any more? I mean, what more we could know is if the salvage operations actually find, I suppose, a piece of a torpedo or a mine or some kind of launching device, delivery device. And there's all sorts of speculation as to how something could have been launched. But, probably the odds of finding things are decreasing with time, and I think this very open question of, whether we're going to get any more. So it's possible the South Korean government and other governments are going to have to craft a response based on the current situation, which is, yeah, very probably everyone has the feeling this must have been North Korea, and yet North Korea has, the DPRK has already disavowed. They have not claimed responsibility, and it's highly unlikely they'll change that. And, you don't have the smoking gun that you can carry into the UN Security Council or UN chambers and say, here it is, here's proof they did it. So jumping ahead, what is China's position going to be? I mean, China, I think, has already made a comment expressing condolences for the tragedy, but using very sort of detached language about we should all find an appropriate, parties will find an appropriate way to resolve the issue kind of thing. Without further evidence, I don't see China coming out strongly and saying, yeah, we got to hit them harder with sanctions. So let me stop there. There's still a lot of material, but just to get things going.
Thanks. Tom, did you have any insights on that, whether it's the question of China or smoking guns or forward movement to the UN Security Council on possible sanctions?
Well, I agree with John that the real issue may well be that we'll never be able to draw a conclusion exactly or find that the fingerprints or the smoking gun that gives us the grounds for going to the UN Security Council with any hope of appropriate success. I was struck, John, by your saying that the latest you had heard was that it seemed equally possible that it was either a torpedo or a mine. I think the issue is quite different depending on that, and we may never be able to determine which it was.
David, have you some thoughts in response to these points?
Yes, I think John has made a very important point. I'm not at all an expert on maritime or naval matters, but it sounds logically it would seem that it may be very difficult to get conclusive evidence of what exactly or who exactly caused the sinking of the Chun'an. In that case, though, there are still a number of things that can be done. I think since most South Koreans probably already believe it was likely the North Koreans have done this, that this has been an important object lesson for the South Korean public and political parties as to the nature of the North Korean threat. I think this will result in South Korea bolstering its security and defense policies. In fact, the president has already appointed his national security advisor and another advisor to co-head a team that will review South Korea's entire national security and military policy. So I think that's a very good thing to do. I think this will result in a further strengthening of U.S.-ROK alliance ties. And even, as I said, we don't have conclusive evidence as to who did this, since it's fairly apparent that it probably was North Korea, South Korea, the United States, and other interested members of the international community can indeed go quietly, at least, to countries such as China and hold this before them. I think China, for its own understandable reasons, has taken a very cautious approach toward North Korea and has been fairly supportive. But I think there are, among the younger generation in China, and John is much more expert on this and can correct me if I'm wrong, but I get the sense that among the younger generation in China, foreign policy experts, there are a number who look upon North Korea more critically in terms of Chinese interest than do members of the older generation of the leaders in China.
I agree very much, David, and that's one thing that makes it both interesting and difficult to figure out where China stands on a lot of the issues with North Korea, because there is an increasing diversity of opinion, of expert opinion, and even to some extent public opinion insofar as the Chinese public follows this issue. And, you know, you can get, say, American experts like myself who focus on China telling you different things about what China's going to do based on which Chinese expert, they listen to, because there is that range of view. In my view, the government position, the official position that Beijing has been taking is still quite consistent. They've allowed the debate to open up, and they clearly want to foster, give room for academics and think tanks and advisors to explore options, and that may indicate, down the road where China might go. The policy itself is fairly consistent. I mean, one interesting thing from, the Chinese perspective again is some of the thinking as to, okay, if North Korea did this, whether or not we get the fingerprints, as Tom called it, why? You know, I mean, that's another very important question that sometimes gets looked over a little bit. You know, and I think there are, again, there's this indeterminacy. There are different plausible scenarios, none of which you can prove, but that say very different things about where North Korea could be. You know, one is that this is, and I think this is a little bit more common perhaps in China, that this is a kind of fog of war or state of war scenario where, of course, there's a history of these sorts of naval skirmishes in that area. The borderline is not accepted by North Korea, so it's a kind of open, it's constantly a source of tension. And, of course, there's an incident just last fall in November, so there are theories that, again, at a kind of localized level, the North Korean Navy was looking for a fight. But within that context of tension, of back and forth naval skirmishes, some including loss of life, nothing to this degree, but including loss of life, that who knows, you had a stray North Korean mini sub that came upon a ship and didn't know what to do and fired, you know, and then others will say, no way, everything has to be approved by Kim Jong-il all the way at the top. I think in China, people are a little less convinced that the North Korean system runs, you know, with absolute dictatorship all the way down to that level. So you have that kind of fog of war slash state of war scenario. Another is the kind of North Korean version of the dual track. You know, I mean, the United States policy toward North Korea is more or less dual track, sanctions and engage. We can do both. If they show willingness to engage, then maybe we'll back away from the sanctions a little bit, but we'll keep, you know, we're not going to give them all up. And, you know, essentially that's what we want to do. That's openly our policy. Well, maybe North Korea has its own version of dual track, but it can't sanction anyone. So it does things like this, a kind of guerrilla style that throw everyone off. But then they'll come back, and in 2 weeks, Kim Jong-il will visit Beijing and say, okay, I'm ready for the six-party talks. And South Korean people will still feel raw, but China, Russia, United States will say, look, guys, we got to deal with the nuclear issue. And maybe North Korea gets something out of that because they stuck it to the South Korean Navy and made a point. And then a third scenario is that there are real splits within North Korea in terms of, you know, those aligned more with the military who are very comfortable with the perpetual state of war that the country has lived in for 60 years, are very proud of the nuclear program, and see any potential diplomatic progress as a threat to the system they've built and they run. And so, you know, some scenario where basically that group orchestrated this to preemptively scuttle any possibility of resumption of six-party talks. I mean, six-party talks were not close to imminent resumption, but there were certainly things going on, and there were developments, there were possibilities, and so that's another kind of scenario. But I think all you know, it'd be good to hear views of others. But I think thinking these out and other scenarios in terms of if indeed North Korea did this, and even if we walk away with the hunch, okay, we can't really prove it, but we know we did this, it's important to press our thinking to figure out why they would have done this.
Those are all very good factors that certainly weigh consideration in anyone who's interested in picking up on any of those points. To add to that, there's also been the suggestion that the succession issue may be linked to this in some form, at least in terms of trying to legitimize the role of Kim Jong-un, the youngest son, and that perhaps it was orchestrated in that regard. Tom, do you have any feeling in terms of either this question of why on behalf of the North Koreans, or to pick up on two of David's points, South Korean public opinion and the pressures that may exist on the policy process, or the U.S.-ROK alliance ties, which also...
Well, first, I very much agree with what David said about the U.S.-ROK alliance, that, you know, this event, I think, can only underscore the importance of close U.S.-South Korean collaboration within the alliance, and I think lead to strengthening it. But I guess I think what John said even adds to the complexity. I mean, on the one hand, we may never, you know, really find the fingerprints or proof that North Korea did this, and we may never find the truth of why North Korea did this. I don't know whether it is again, none of us are experts on naval warfare. I assume when you deliberately shoot a torpedo, you aim to hit the other vessel, and this seemed not to have hit it. You know, I don't know whether that was, you know, whether maybe it was a shot across the bow or something. I see the previous incidents over the past several years as kind of naval skirmishes. This one, if it really was a deliberate shot by a torpedo aimed at sinking a ship, I think goes probably beyond the definition of skirmish. But it's we may never know what the intentions were. Maybe Dave has some thoughts on that.
Well, I agree that, that John has raised a second very good point, in addition to maybe never knowing. Second, even if we know, get proof that North Korea did it, who knows why they would have done it. But, you know, for political leadership in South Korea, I think they probably have to look at this thing in a strategic sort of way. And at this point, it is looking very much like the only candidate is North Korea. And in terms of motivation, well, I based upon my experiences with North Korea, my understanding is that there's a tremendous amount of so-called stovepiping in South Korea. That is, military organizations and government agencies report directly to Kim Jong-il, and that interagency coordination is not that strong. So I am in the camp of those who believe it would be extraordinarily unlikely that a local North Korean commander would have done this on his own. I also find it, again, as a non-military expert, quite improbable that this was an accident. I've heard that the jet bubble, that is the non-contact explosion, is actually a very effective strategy, a tactic for destroying the ship. So I think the indications are that this was North Korea, that it was not a local commander, that it was not an accident. So if that's the case, why would Kim Jong-il order this? Speculating about why North Korea does various things, I think it's really a mug's game, but we have to do it to try to understand where we are. I think the easiest, the most direct possible motivation is twofold. One, that the North Koreans, as John noted, for decades have regarded the northern limit line around these islands as illegitimate. And in fact, in the 70s, they engaged in a major campaign, sending literally hundreds of vessels across the line, and at one point sinking a South Korean patrol boat and killing nearly 30 people to try to get this line changed. And then secondarily, the next factor is that over the past decade, there have been now four incidents involving loss of life in clashes between North and South in the West Sea. And in all of those instances, until the last one, it was the North Koreans who apparently were mostly on the receiving end. So I think it's probably human nature in North Korea as well for there to be a desire to get revenge, and for there to be a political need for the leadership to side with their military in getting revenge. So I'm not saying that that is what happened, but if we have to guess, if we have to speculate, I think that's probably the likeliest motivation.
And in response to that, the question has been raised about the pressures that the South Korean public will bring to bear on the South Korean political system. With upcoming elections, does anyone have a feeling about the pressures on the Lee Myung-bak administration to try to strike at an answer or to point to the North Koreans with some definitive way? Or do we feel that it may be left as an open-ended question? John, do you have any thoughts, having just come back from Seoul, about public opinion and the pressures there?
Well, I defer to Tom and David. I would say certainly on this quick brief visit, I mean, I did pick up on the kinds of pressures that the government is under from the two ends of the political spectrum. I mean, we've been praising Myung-bak's caution and restraint. That I think that certainly has been the international judgment. But he's under a lot of pressure domestically from his conservative base. And there were criticisms, I think pretty strong criticisms, including in the mainstream conservative media, that he didn't come out more quickly and more firmly. I even heard anecdotally, disappointment that he didn't, sort of do what George W. Bush had done after September 11th. I mean, this kind of sentiment is very much there. And then it should also be said there on the other end of the spectrum, there's all kinds of criticisms being leveled at the government that are sort of two-prong. One is the ineptitude critique, you know, that the investigation was not carried out quickly enough, and that this indicates some problems in the military structure. Much of that, I think, probably can be put off to ramping up for elections. But then there's also, you know, lots of I guess you'd call it conspiracy theory going on. The most kind of mainstream version of which would be that, you know, this is a version of the North Korea card being played, and that, you know, again, there was indication of movement toward the six-party talks. I mean, the two most prominent data points would be at least rumors that Kim Gae-gwan, the lead North Korean negotiator, was about to do some kind of trip to the United States, was about to have some kind of bilateral contact with the U.S., and that was part of the Chinese three-step return to the six-party talks. And then also you had, I mean, kind of always do, but you had an uptick in rumors that Kim Jong-il was going to Beijing, and that the Chonan incident, you know, killed these developments. I mean, the theory is not that this was staged whatsoever, but that the South Korean government is to some extent, you know, using this tragedy to forward its kind of overall policy, that it plays into the policy of being, you know, hardline North Korea, and the kind of next step would be to continue the sort of rollback of the Sunshine Policy. So the next step from this, whether we get any more evidence or not, will be dismantling Kaesong. And the critique here is that this is just simply not working. This is not improving inter-Korean relations. This isn't moving the peninsula closer toward peace, reintegration, reunification. And this is just going to accelerate a negative trend that started when this government came into office.
Do we have any questions from the table or from any of our callers online?
Yes, this is Kevin Keough from the Korea Society. Given we're discussing policy options, accepting the fact that there is an inextricable link on the peninsula between ROK forces and U.S. forces, also given the fact that a conflict in Korea at the same time as a Middle East conflict is everybody's worst nightmare because of the ability of the U.S. to actually support that, and assuming that any response from the RK government include a military option, which, were it significant, could certainly escalate, what degree do you think the fear of the U.S. in having to engage in something more than a small incident would play right now with the Korean government's choice of what they can do?
David, Tom?
I don't think we even have to go as far as thinking about the United States. I think President Lee and his very wise approach to this whole issue has shown that he understands the delicate nature of security on the Korean Peninsula. South Korea would have a lot to lose by acting in a hot-headed manner. And John mentioned that there are some people in South Korea who say that President Lee should have responded the way that George Bush did. Well, of course, thank God he did not. President Bush attacked and occupied two countries for largely emotional reasons without really understanding what the cost and consequences would be. President Lee is a businessman, a mature individual, and I think he's looked at the overall situation. So I don't think that President Lee will conclude that a military response is the smart way to do it. You know, some people say that, well, look, North Korea gets away literally with murder. And they have, over the decades, on occasion, murdered, killed South Korean military personnel and other people. But what have they really gotten for it? They're isolated from the international community. Country is desperately poor. The South Korean economy is at least 40 times bigger on a per capita basis. The South Korean military is far more powerful, in conventional terms than the North Korean military. So I don't think it's going to be an issue of, you know, whether the U.S. will support or not support or can or cannot support South Korean military action directly against North Korea. I don't think that's going to happen.
This is Tom. I agree absolutely with what David has said. I was in Korea after the incident, but I think somewhat earlier than John was there. There was a lot of criticism of President Lee for seemingly not standing firmer. There was some criticism of the Korean government as a whole, led by President Lee, for allowing, you know, the survivors to be sort of televised in their hospital pajamas all in a row. Some people argued that made South Korea look like losers, made them look weak. I think he has subsequently, President Lee has overcome some of that by playing more to national emotions, including with this week of mourning. But I think the fact remains that no one in South Korea wants another Korean War. I think there's very little support for the kind of retaliation that could escalate into even more violence on the peninsula. This happened at a time when South Korea is playing a very statesmanlike role in the world, with the G20 coming up this year, with the nuclear summit coming up in 2 years, the economy doing well. I think in the final analysis, Lee will be thanked by the nation for reacting calmly to this. And I do think that the South Korean government will find ways to North Korea suffers consequences from this action if they are deemed responsible.
Thank you, Tom. I think it's important to note in this context as well that Lee Myung-bak last week met with Chun Doo-hwan and Kim Il-sung, former presidents, and while we look at that largely through a Confucian context, I think it also gets back to that point that John has brought up about the movement in terms of dismantling Sunshine. So is there opinion around the table in terms of whether we see a period ahead of continued friction, maybe dismantlement of Kaesong or Kumgan projects? Are we back into sort of a Cold War guise for a while, or do we think that given the confidence of South Korea, its economic leverage, its global hosting of the G20 and other positive indicators that this is something that we can move beyond sooner than not? Any opinions? John, David?
Well, sinking another's country's warship it like that is an act of war. So I don't think we'll get past this very quickly. I think this is going to take quite a bit of time to deal with. Are you still on the line?
Yes, we all are.
Yes, I think this will take quite a bit of time to get past, and I think that South Korea will have to take a number of steps diplomatically, militarily, to deal with this issue. The North Koreans need to be shown that this kind of behavior does, in fact, have consequences.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough question. I think that the South Korean government is facing a pretty difficult period here of figuring out how to craft a response. I think they do want to remain measured. Serious military options are not really on the table, or that seems to be the case, as most of us agree on this call. At the same time, there's going to be enough of the South Korean people, including the core of Lee Myung-bak's supporters, who are going to demand something. And so what's that going to be? So far, what I've heard floated by Foreign Minister Yu is going to the UN Security Council and demanding some kind of sanctions. I mean, Kumgang, as Steve mentioned, is already sort of dismantlement is well underway. Assets are being frozen and labeled confiscated as we speak. Kaesong could certainly be next. So those would be some visible ways of trying to, show North Korea there's consequences. I think, again, you know, another interesting question here is going to be China, and already I'm seeing more of this discussion in South Korea and in the United States of sort of what's China going to do here. Kirk Campbell recently commented on this in terms of a fairly bland comment, but expecting China to act responsibly and be involved in the process of investigation and determining appropriate response. So, I mean, there are different scenarios. It's possible that China is going to come under another big wave of intensified pressure from South Korea and from the United States to whether it's signing off on sanctions at the UNSC level or somehow signaling a united front and on the sanctions side, implementing at some greater degree sanctions. In my view, China is not going to be willing to really go that route much at all. And I think this could have a kind of paradoxical effect within Beijing of re-intensifying their efforts at getting the six-party talks going or getting the process leading up to the six-party talks going again, almost as a vent for all the pressure that's going to be created to do something on the sanctions side. Whether that will really go anywhere or not, I agree in the short term it won't because, you know, Kim Jong-bak can't really get things going. But I think we could paradoxically see another kind of intensification of both the sanctions and the engagement pressure.
Thank you. Tom, any final thoughts on the situation as we move forward?
Well, one, I think, here we are, Americans discussing the policy options in the wake of an apparent attack on a South Korean naval vessel. I think we very much need to take our cue from the Koreans in moving forward. This create a very new situation, and it makes it very difficult to move ahead business as usual on things like the six-party talks. I agree that the Chinese are a factor here, and I think we can only hope that the Chinese will find this as unacceptable as the rest of us do. Certainly, the Chinese do not have any interest in instability or further violence on the Korean Peninsula. I think we face a very real dilemma. I fundamentally believe in communication with the North Koreans. Whatever happens, it seems to me we need to remain in touch, whether that means we need to remain engaged along the lines of the Sunshine Policy or other things is a different story. But certainly, I don't believe we have an interest in further isolating a country that is already one of the most isolated in the world and one that seems to be capable of carrying out acts like the sinking of this vessel. So I think we need to maintain our lines of communications with the North Koreans, we do need, I think, to in the wake of this incident, if we believe North Korea caused it, to reassess the degree to which we can rely on the North Koreans for responsible behavior within the six-party talk context or outside that.
Thank you, Tom. David, any final thoughts?
Well, I agree with John that I don't think we can rely on the Chinese to do very much, even if there's conclusive evidence that the North Koreans were behind this. I think in the first instance, this has to be the South Koreans who decide how to respond and to actually respond. And as I said, I'm convinced they will not respond by any sort of a military attack or anything like that. And I'm sure they will respond effectively using bolstering their military defenses and also diplomatically. In the second instance, this should be the alliance, the USROK alliance, will respond. And I hope and expect that alliance will be bolstered as a result of this. I would just note that I think, as President Obama and President Lee said at a recent meeting, that coordination and consultation between our governments and relations between our two governments has probably never been better. And I'm very glad that that's the case in a situation like this.
Thank you, David. John, final thoughts?
Yeah, this is Tom. Let me just very strongly endorse that last point. I think we are very lucky now that we have, I think, the closest governmental relationship between the U.S. and the ROK in any time that I can remember, and that is a real asset for both of us. It enables us to respond to this apparent provocation from a position of solidarity and strength.
Thank you, Tom. John?
Well, I hate to end on a slightly discordant note, so maybe Tom and David can jump back in and dissent. But picking up actually on something Tom said about the importance of communication with the North Koreans, and it's probably still too early to really be talking about this, but I do think in the end, this incident, especially if, as I guess, we're not going to have 100% proof of the material cause, let alone an understanding of the ultimate cause, if this was North Koreans, you know, why they did it. I think the longer term lesson is the solution to this problem, and the much bigger problem of which it's a part, is figuring out channels with North Korea, with North Korean leadership and society. And that moments like these are sort of the hardest moments to really go there and think about that. But, you know, in the end, that's where any kind of resolution to the conflict is going to have to come, if it comes at all. And, you know, whether it's sanctions, another set of sanctions, even some kind of, you know, naval retaliation that the South Koreans craft in some way to try and keep it limited, it's not going to change the fundamental dynamics. It's not going to prevent this kind of thing from happening ever again. It's not going to fundamentally change North Korean behavior or the dynamics in inter-Korean relations.
Gentlemen?
I think articulated better what I was trying to say.
Well, I as a former Foreign Service officer who worked under Ambassador Hubbard, firmly believe in communicating with both friends and enemies. And I believe we should continue to communicate with North Korea. I'm actually quite confident we are through the New York Channel and through and the South Koreans as well, probably through informal channels. But I
think there's a qualitative difference between engagement as it has come to be known and communication. I think certainly the latter needs to continue.
Yes. Of course, the follow-up question is, can such engagement really have a profound effect on a system like North Korea? And that's an open question about which there's long been a debate, and I think that debate will continue far into the future.
Thank you. We'd like to close again with condolences to all of our Korean colleagues, both here today and listening to this podcast. And we thank Tom, David, and John, and also to Daniel and Peter of our media team. I'm Stephen Erper of the Korea Society, and we thank you for joining this podcast and urge you to join us at www.koreasociety.org. Please join us for our Summer 2010 War and Remembrance series. Thank you all.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Korea Society, its staff, management, or sponsors. Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Korea Society. If you enjoyed it, please consider becoming a member. Visit www.koreasociety.org for more information about memberships and to learn more about the programs available at the Korea Society.